All right, we're in parallel world again. Who are you?
Hi, my name is Rahul Padil. I'm a test lead in a group called Parallel Computing Platform. Mm-hmm. We're building a runtime to help drive parallelism so that developers can actually take advantage of multi-core systems.
Absolutely. So we've done a lot of stuff already on Channel 9 around addressing the core issues and why we, you know, why it's hard or impossible today to actually write concurrent code using the tool set that's out there, right? Everyone's writing sequential code.
Yep.
So what we haven't tackled, obviously, is testing.
Yep.
So how do you, you know, testing concurrent code is very difficult. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
So before we get into testing concurrent code, we'll actually talk about what is what are the some of the concurrency issues, and then we can go about how do we, you know, approach mitigating the risks of each of these problems.
So cool.
I'll just whiteboard because that's what I'm comfortable with.
Excellent, man. Whiteboarding is good stuff.
Okay.
So here, I'm just going to switch over here, and let's rock and roll.
Okay. Cool. So first and foremost, you know, when you have multi-threaded concurrent applications, multi-threaded applications, usually these applications are cooperating to achieve a common goal, right? So now to achieve a common goal, usually they need to share data, they need to talk to each other, they need to share data, etc. So the first problem comes from when they're trying to share data and it's not safe to share it simultaneously. So that's a race, okay? So that's absolute basic. So so let's say you have thread 1 and thread 2, and there's a shared variable x, for instance, and then thread 1 does x++, thread 2 does x minus minus. If in a concurrent world, both the threads are executing concurrently, and you might have incorrect updates for the same shared location. So this is the first, because of the need of shared data, comes the need for protecting shared data so that you don't have too much concurrent access.
Absolutely.
Right. So the typical ways to mitigate this problem is to use locks. So once you use locks, the system guarantees that the same shared state or whatever is in this within the access of the lock is always going to be exclusive access. So that's what locks do. Now, if you use locks incorrectly, it can lead to a different problem, which is the deadlocks. So let's take another problem. So you have thread 1, and you have two shared variables, x and y, and the program goes like, and so you have, for each one, you have a lock, two different lock objects. So you say, thread 1 needs to access lock, both of them are going to share the variable, so thread 1 does lock lx, and it does lock ly, and then it says x plus plus and y plus plus, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. And thread 2 needs to do the same thing, except it just says, I'm going to pick lock y first, and then try to lock x, but it does the same thing. So let's say, for whatever reason, it does this y minus minus and x minus minus. So what can happen in this scenario is that both thread 1 and thread 2 are acquiring the same set of locks, but they're acquiring it in a different order. Okay. What happens is if lock x, so let's say thread 1 comes in, acquires lock x, okay, and thread 2 comes in and acquires lock y. So this is step 1. This is step 2. Now, thread 1 continues executing and then says, I want lock y, because thread 2 has lock y, has already acquired lock y, thread 1 is now going to wait for thread 2. Okay. Now, thread 2 does the same thing. It says, I want to acquire lock X, but thread 1 already has a lock X, and it's going to wait for thread 1. Mm-hmm. So now both of them are simultaneously waiting for each other, mm-hmm. and because they're waiting for each other, both of them cannot make forward progress. So this leads to a deadlock.
Excellent.
Okay. So these are basic issues, and you know most people are aware of this. So let's get into some more subtle issues, mm-hmm. right? So typically, there's something also called compiler reordering. So if you have, let's take another example, thread 1 and thread 2. So let's say you have a variable called global done. Okay? So let's say there's a pattern where thread 2 does while not global done, you know, just spin wait or something like that. Okay. And thread 1 goes ahead and then sets global done equals true. So if initially, if this value was false, right, and the assumption that thread 2 makes is that at some point, thread 1 is going to set it to true, and so I'm going to break out of the while loop and continue this way. But the modern compilers are smart, and what they want to do is they want to try and, especially when you compile for optimization, when you prefer execution speed, what the compiler is going to say is, hey, I'm looking at this thread, the global done is never going to be set to true, so I'm just going to change this to while not false. I'm just going to change this to, while not false. Right? And so when it optimizes it this way, and even if thread 1 comes along and sets global done equals true, mm-hmm. thread 2 is never going to break out of this while loop. Right? And so this is a little bit more subtle than the other problems. So today, typically, when you're going to use shared variables like this, first of all, we recommend that you use locks when you're using shared variables like this, even if one is doing all the reading and one is doing all the writing. A common mitigation for something like this is to declare this volatile. Okay. If you declare the variable volatile, then it instructs the compiler to not optimize memory related to this shared variable.
Okay.
So so now the compiler, when it sees it's volatile, it's going to say, oh, okay, I'm going to just stick to fetching global done every time. Every time this loop is executed, I'm going to stick to fetching the global done. Okay?
Yeah.
And again, this has slightly different behavior when you look at different technologies like C Sharp will do slightly different things, and C++ will do slightly different things. We'll actually get into another issue, and it's called memory reordering, and this is specific to multi-core systems.
Okay.
So let's say you have thread 1, and you have global variables A global variables M equal to 0, N equal to 0, and then you have thread 1 and thread 2. So thread 1 comes in and says M equals 5, and I have some local accesses to this, and A equals M, and B equals, okay? And thread 2 sets N equals 10, and C equals 10 and D equals M. So the logic of these threads do is very simple. But what I want to highlight is some subtle errors that this can actually lead to. So in thread 1, I assign the global variable M equal to 5. Then I set local variables A equals to M, and M equals another variable,
okay.
Another global variable, N. Okay. And in case of thread 2, I set the other global variable equal to 10, and then I assign the local variables C and D to N and M respectively. Okay? So let's take a look at some possible values of state, right? So let's say once both thread 1 and thread 2 are executed, a user tries to observe what is the values of M and D. Mm-hmm. B and D. So I can infer here that if B is equal to 0, okay, that means N is equal to 0, right? Mm-hmm. Which means that N equals 10 was not yet executed according to thread 1.
Yeah.
Okay? So I can set up an ordering and say, this statement must have happened before this statement. Okay? So if that is true, then okay, if B is equal to 0, N is equal to 0, and we've already established that this statement executed before this, then B must be equal to 5 because it's going to get assigned to M equal to 5. So we've established an order that thread 2 actually happened after thread 1.
Okay.
Right? And you can do a similar inference the other way, that is, if D equal to 0, then, yeah, actually, N equals 0 is just for the inference step, then you can also infer that B is equal to 10. Now, this automatically means that B and D can never be 0 together at the same time, right? But there could be some subtle hardware optimizations which can actually lead to a condition where both B and D are actually equal to 0 after thread 1 and thread 2 are executed. Hmm. And this is specific to multicore and multiproc LAN. Okay. And the reason that happens is because of the hardware optimizations where the CPU says, okay, I'm going to access M, but I don't yet see the need to publish M to the other threads executing on other cores. Okay. And the same thing happens with thread 2. It's like, I don't need to publish the value of N yet, and nothing has changed in M yet, according to what I can see, and so I don't need to fetch the absolute latest value of M, and so on. So this can happen in multi-core systems. Hmm. So. You remember I was talking about the volatile keyword?
Yes.
Right? So if you declared these keywords as volatile in C#, then you wouldn't see this problem. Okay.
Even on a multi-core machine?
Even on a multi-core. Because C# will guarantee that there's full barrier semantics. Okay? Full fence semantics, rather. On C++, however, this is only a guide to the compiler and not necessarily a guide to the hardware saying that apply full fence. Okay. So in general, we would recommend when people are trying to use multi-threaded programming, when they're sharing data, always use the traditional coordination semantics like locks, mutexes, semaphores, events, and things like that. And if you're going to be using lock-free, be extra careful when you're using that. So because you have to be aware of all these patterns.
Absolutely.
Now, the thing to remember is when you're writing concurrent program, now, it's not as simple as sequential in the sense that you have to be aware of what language you're using, what technologies you're using underneath, what operating system you're using, what hardware technology you're using. So now suddenly the dimension changes. The amount a programmer has to think when it comes to concurrent programming, the dimension changes just drastically.
Absolutely.
So even in this, like the hardware memory reordering, the semantics are different for x86, for x64, and IE64. So you have to absolutely know and be sure that this is going to work across all the various platforms.
Absolutely. Now that could be abstracted away in a runtime or a virtual machine. No?
Not exactly. So you kind of abstract away everything.
Yeah.
These are common
programming principles. Understood.
Common programming practices. So what makes it hard is testing. If you want to test for these things, and if the dev team or you as a developer are using these different ways to do concurrent programming, then you have to be aware that it's incredibly hard to test, because the moment you actually deploy the application, depends on which operating system it's running on, depends on what hardware it's running on, depending on how many cores are there, you're going to start seeing different problems. So now testing is, it becomes a monumental effort when you're dealing with concurrency.
Absolutely. Okay.
So so these were some correctness issues. So there's also some subtle performance issues that people should be aware of. We can briefly go over them. One performance issue is what we call false cache sharing. Okay. So let's say there's an there's a structure with just say four words in the structure. Okay. Now, let's say thread one is going to use this piece of the memory. Thread two is going to use this piece of the memory. Thread three is going to use this piece of memory, and thread four, so on. Okay. If all of them are actually scheduled on different cores, now, technically, let's assume that this fits in one cache line, right? If it fits in one cache line, then every time thread one accesses even just this byte, even though it's not actually being shared by any of the other threads, the full cache will actually have to be published across all the cores. So every time thread one accesses this variable, so it updates the local cache here, and then when thread two accesses this guy, even though it's not using the same shared memory, because it is in the same cache line, the memory needs to be pulled out and pushed back here. And same thing, as soon as it's done, it has to be pulled out and pushed back across all the four cores. So if all four threads are simultaneously accessing the different pieces of memory, but if the memory is on the same cache line, then all of them are going to start thrashing the cache, and you can see severe performance degradation. And it may not be obvious, but when you start looking at why is there so much bus activity, why is there so much activities around the cache, then it'll become a little bit more obvious. So when you're, even when you're not sharing memory, you have to be aware that different threads could be thrashing the cache. So when it comes to concurrency issues, it's all the way from correctness to reliability to performance and so on.
Sure.
So when it comes to testing this, you have to take a holistic approach. Right? So the first thing, the thing that's absolutely irreplaceable when it comes to concurrency testing is code reviews, code reviews, code reviews, and more code reviews. Nothing can substitute that right now.
Sure. Okay?
The concurrency testing is very, very nascent right now. There's not enough technologies that can catch all these issues. The first and foremost thing is spend adequate time doing code reviews, design review, making sure that you're avoiding all the common pitfalls of concurrency anti-pattern.
And that, I mean, you could use static analysis tools to parse through code and figure out whether or not you're doing something insane. But I guess when I meant earlier about a virtual machine abstracting away this problem, it's sort of a liberal use of the word virtual machine. What I mean is, with the whole parallel computing platform,
right,
you're abstracting this type of thing away from the user in the sense that you don't think about threads explicitly, which means you really don't think about locks explicitly. You think about tasks. And all of this rocket science will happen by the machine. That's what I meant, and the machine being the CLR.
Right.
And the base class libraries.
Well, that's the eventual goal, but it's going to take us a lot of years to actually get to something like that. So even today, actually, if you see what we're building today, we're abstracting away from people trying to deal with threads explicitly, trying to deal with parallelization explicitly, trying to chunk different sizes of parallelism and saying different sizes of the data. Different data set sizes and saying parallelize it statically ahead of time and say this thread go do this work, this thread go do this work, and so on. So we're abstracting at that level where we are asking programmers to not think in terms of number of threads, but we're asking them just identify what can be done concurrently, mm-hmm. and we'll take care of the rest.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's the piece we're abstracting. Just identify how many other things can be done concurrently, mm-hmm. and we'll abstract away the rest. However, we still don't have a good way to... So concurrent programs still have a need to share data. Mm-hmm. We still don't have a good way to abstract away the need for for protecting shared data and things like that.
Sure.
Of course, you can go down the lane of functional programming and things like that, mm-hmm. Which I'm not qualified to talk about.
Sure. So, yeah. Well, I mean, we don't expect developers to throw away their tool set. I mean, we have to work with what we have. So, but we can always add, and Anders and company are adding functional constructs to C#, yeah. which are making things like, you know, like link and plink yeah. possible yeah. because of the semantics. Okay, great. So, we get it. I think everybody in the audience understands that, you know, writing concurrent code correctly using locks is difficult. Mm-hmm. And then understanding, you know, the machine, you know, architecture is very important, and you know, understanding cache lines and stuff like that. That's usually in the domain of, you know, driver writers and system developers. The people that are writing in C# and VB.NET, they're not thinking about cache lines.
Yes.
What they are is sometimes using threads and using them incorrectly.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like managed code, this doesn't matter to manage code. So yeah. we have the same problems. Yeah. Okay, so let's continue. I just wanted to yeah. I think
so, yeah, the next phase that I wanted to specifically talk about is what are the approaches that we take today to kind of test and make sure that we're correct and we're performant and things like that.
Okay.
So that's the next piece of things that I want to talk about. As I mentioned earlier, the first thing that's absolutely irreplaceable is doing a lot of code reviews. Mm-hmm. Okay. The second thing, which is what we traditionally have depended on, is building a solid stress testing framework. Okay. When we say stress testing, essentially what we're doing is we're going to run... So there are two different ways to do stress. You take the same scenario, and you run it repeatedly. Okay? Mm-hmm. So think about, let's say if we were to test Outlook, we would let Outlook run for 20 days and make sure that the long haul, the reliability issues... So if there was a race that's going to happen, it's possible that it's going to happen in... after running it for 20 days. So you take the same scenario, compose mail, send mail, compose mail, send mail, compose mail, send mail, and mm-hmm. you know, stress it over long, extended periods of time, and then try to catch some races and deadlocks and crashes there.
Sure.
Okay. The other way is to throw in a whole lot of scenarios, stress the CPU, stress the memory, try and affect different timings. We are not going to have the ability to test all the hardware with all the hardware in the world, with all the operating systems, and all the time, we will never be able to have enough machines to ensure that all the different timing aspects of a concurrent program is actually run through, and we, you know, yield all the bugs out of that. So what we can do, the next best thing is to try and affect the timing by overloading the CPU and the memory, and throw in a lot more scenarios. So think about all sorts of random clicks on the Outlook button and compose mails, send mails, and things like that, and peg the CPU, and then try and see if you can break in, catch some races, deadlocks, and crashes, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But stress is more of hope and pray, right? Mm-hmm. You let things run, and then wait, hope that it catches a bug. You'll never have the confidence that, okay, I've done decent amount of coverage in terms of concurrency, and I'm kind of concurrency bug-free here. Mm-hmm. Okay. But stress is also a good supplement right now. Traditionally that's a tool that we've been using. We'll continue to invest in stress technologies to try and catch concurrent bugs. So the next thing is a tool called Chess. Okay, so it's being built by Microsoft Research. There's a prototype tool out there right now. People can go download it. So you can just search for Chess Microsoft Research, mm-hmm. and people can download it. So Chess introduces a little bit more methodology and systematic way to approach testing. Okay, so let's say today, typically people who write applications, what customers have always asked us for is okay, look, I've written a unit test. I know my application is parallel code, but I've written a unit test. It will exercise some parts of the parallel code, but I never know if that unit test is enough, or in 5 days if it breaks, whether it's a regression or was it just that it didn't catch the same it didn't catch the bug the first time it ran. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what Chess does is it takes a unit test, and so let's say this is your app. Okay. So, and you've written a unit test to test that app. So it takes the same unit test, and it takes over the execution control of the application, and it essentially hijacks the scheduling of the application. Even if your application was parallelized, what it'll do is it'll take over control of all the threads, mm-hmm. run one thread at a time, introduce very, very systematic interleaving, and run the same unit test over and over and over again against that application. Okay, so that way, the same unit test, all we ask developers to do is just write the unit test that they've been writing, just run it against test. Of course, it's going to take a little longer to finish all the different permutations of the interleaving, mm-hmm. but then at least you'll know that you had a thorough coverage of the application.
Excellent.
So that's one tool that people can go take a look at today. And I think there will be more updates around Chess going forward. Mm-hmm. Another way to approach it is via static analysis, which you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. right? So you can technically go and look at the code and go and build a control flow graph and see if shared data is being accessed concurrently via the control flow graph or not. You can also try and detect deadlocks, because you can, once you have a control flow graph, you can try and detect whether it leads to a deadlock or not and things like that. So the static analysis is one way to go. We don't have an external tool yet that can do static analysis on Microsoft C++ code, mm-hmm. For concurrency checking especially. So another way to approach this is at design time, which is model checking. Okay, mm-hmm. So we talked about at runtime you can use a tool like Chess, which will do systematic interleavings.
And to be clear, Chess is for unmanaged code, for native code.
For native.
Okay.
But there will be updates in the future.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we'll look at, you know, depending on what the customer needs are and so on. Right now it's a prototype tool that's available.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the different approaches that that you can take in testing, right? So one is at runtime, which is use some sort of a dynamic analysis tool where you're looking at the footprint of the execution and you say, okay, so did a bug occur, did a bug not occur, and so on. You can do some sort of analysis there. That's what Chess does. You can move to the compile time, which is use static analysis. That is, as you're compiling code, try and make sure that as soon as you're done compiling the code, go and build a control flow graph, and then go and analyze and look for concurrency issues. Okay. So the next thing, you can go one step beyond, and you can actually do model checking, and this is at design time. Okay. Mm-hmm. So even let's say we're coming up with a very complicated, very critical concurrent system, like a pacemaker or a, you know, flight control system.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that even at the design level, we're concurrently correct, right? So you can go and model. You can use state-based modeling. I think Spin has been there for a while. Microsoft Research has also released a tool called Zing. Mm-hmm. So you can go to model checking on that. So you can go build a concurrent state machine, and you can run through and see if you can. And you can mathematically prove that you're free of races and deadlocks and things like that. Of course, if you can prove it only at the design level, when you can still go ahead and introduce coding errors, mm-hmm. and that design tool will not check it.
So. Yeah,
but at least at the design level, you get good confirmation that you're doing the right thing.
Sure.
So a full testing should actually encompass all of them, but of course you're also you're also trying to ship a product, and you're also trying to meet certain deadlines, so you can't spend all the time doing... So there's a lot of testing you can do, so you can't spend all the time doing everything. So we have to prioritize. And so when we prioritize, we spend a lot of time doing code reviews, and we spend a lot of time using runtime checkers, because the one good thing about runtime checkers, the dynamic analysis tools, is that the bugs tend to be real because you actually hit it during the execution of the code. So it gives us an automatic way to prioritize and say, okay, these bugs are probably going to be hit by customers because we just hit it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's also important to point out that in a code review, I mean, you're going to catch sort of syntactic mistakes, and then you're going to catch kind of mistakes in the design of the algorithm, right? So if you pass code reviews, and I know you do a lot of code reviews, it still means, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to run into conditions where, you know, as you were mentioning earlier, where you have the cache pipeline that maybe you didn't take into consideration or whatever, your code still might look good. Mm-hmm. So then you run it through the runtime analysis tools. But then, of course, I'm wondering with the advent of, it's been so long since I did the interview with those guys, with the new compiler framework.
Phoenix, you
Phoenix,
mean? Right.
Where you could add some really interesting compile time tools.
Actually, that's what's being built right now in-house. Mm-hmm. We're experimenting with a few things. So there's a team that's actually spearheading that. So you can, as I said, you can. If people are familiar with prefix and prefast technologies,
sure.
it's gonna look like very much like just an extension to that. Essentially, you annotate code, and then so you can think of simple things like. So let's say you have a shared variable. Right? Mm-hmm. And so if you were to annotate this code and say, this shared variable is always supposed to be protected by lock X. Okay? And once you annotate the code and say that there's a shared variable that's always going to be protected by lock X, the static analysis tool can just go and look for all X's of shared X where lock X is actually not being held. Very simple. Right? Mm-hmm. Can be done. You can also do things like, you remember we talked about deadlocks, mm-hmm. where one thread was doing lock X and lock Y, and the other thread was doing lock Y and lock X. So the mitigation to this is very simple, where you say all threads should always follow a global locking order, and always make sure that X is always locked before Y. If for any reason both the locks should be held at the same time, always make sure that X is always held before Y is held. So this is just a good programming practice, but we can actually enforce it using static analysis.
Cool.
Right? So you can go and say, define lock order that, you know, X is always before Y. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so if at any point the static analysis and its control flow can understand that for some reason Y is being held before X, it can immediately flag an error and say, hey, there's a potential deadlock, you're not following the correct locking order, mm-hmm. and so on. So you can do things like that. What else can you do? Static analysis. Race conditions. Lock set analysis. Oh, so one other thing that we're kind of experimenting with is if you can drive the program in an autopilot. Not everybody is going to spend all the time annotating all the code, right? Especially take a look if Windows source code is
a lot,
you know, thousands and thousands and millions of
sure.
lines of code.
Yeah.
Going back and annotating all of that just to make sure it's concurrently safe is going to be a lot of work, mm-hmm. right? So we're also working on things like. When I say we, it's some tool team in
sure.
Microsoft, not me.
Understood.
So we were also working in things whether it can go in autopilot mode, which is go look at the code. We understand what are the traditional locks that Windows offers. We understand a lot of the Win32 semantics. So let's go and analyze the code and try and build get the intention, what the programmer intended to do in those codes, in those code pieces, and see if we can automatically detect errors and things like that. So,
sure.
So they're also working on things like autopilot problems.
Great. So, I mean, clearly the message here is, you know, write good code review it, run stress tests, run static analysis tools, run compilation tools.
Yep.
And then cross your fingers.
Well, hopefully we'll get to a point where we'll never have to cross our fingers and we have a way. So there's another guy in our team, Chris, and along with Roy. Mm-hmm. Those guys are working on things like, how do I know? So today we have code coverage tools.
Sure.
What does it mean to have concurrency coverage?
It's a great question.
Right. So Chris and Roy, two guys from our team, they're working on that, trying to figure out how do we define concurrency coverage? How do I know that this product is ready to ship? Do I have enough coverage? Today we have some arbitrary bars in for code coverage. You can say X percentage of code path is being covered, mm-hmm. so hence it's ready to ship. Right. Mm-hmm. But what about concurrency? Right. It's still so nascent. We're trying to figure out good way to define coverage. So hopefully, when we get to a point where we say, okay, we define a few metrics, we say, we've done this, this is our concurrency coverage, this is our code coverage, we've run through all these tools, we should have nailed most of the bugs. And hopefully we'll get to a point where we don't have to cross our fingers.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's definitely is the answer to that. Yeah. It's just that, I mean, the whole thing is that concurrency and parallelism is just, you know, in the last couple of years becoming a big deal for general purpose programmers. I mean, it's not like the scientists at MSR have been thinking about it for 20 years or, you know, the fact that supercomputers, people who write supercomputer code and, you know, the operating systems for such things have thought about this a lot. The guys in Windows who write the NT kernel, the concurrency, they sleep, they live in and die with locks. It's not a big deal to them.
Right.
But it's the general purpose programming people
who
actually compose most people who write code.
Right.
And so this is and we're really working hard. We don't have all the answers.
Right. And in the way we approach concurrent programming today, mm-hmm. Which is using multiple threads and stuff like that, it's very hard for anybody to just look at the code and compose what's happening in their heads.
Mm.
It's extremely difficult. So we have to change that barrier as well. We have to change the abstraction that
absolutely.
We were talking about.
Well, I mean, I think the work that Joe Duffy and Stephen Tube and all these people on your team and your broader team are doing with tasks and the whole notion of a task parallel library, where you don't think in terms of threads.
Right, and you think in terms of
tasks. And the task can either spin up a thread or not, or steal from another thread. All that can be done by the system.
Yep.
And the developer can think about the algorithms. And so essentially it's like it's moving the notion of concurrency away from developers, just as a garbage collector removed the notion of memory management from .NET developers.
Right,
but that's not saying that it's a silver bullet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work to be done, man.
Yeah. If you can get to something like that, then that's just perfect.
Cool, but I mean you have a hard job. So let's talk a little bit. How long have you been at Microsoft?
I've been here for about 4.5 years now, and I started originally with the Windows Presentation Foundation.
Cool.
So if folks are using imaging, bitmap effects, media, I'm proud to say I was part of that team. So.
Great. Well, yeah, it's really compelling.
Now, a couple of years ago, we moved to the. I moved to the parallel computing platform.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first tester on the team.
Nice.
And, so it's been extremely challenging. It's been a lot of learning going on here. Just lots of complex things to figure out how to test and so on. So,
that's great.
And you remember all the patterns that I was talking about that, you know, general programmers should not do.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing all of that because we want to be fast, we want to be efficient, and we're doing a lot of lock-free coding and things like that, and it becomes that much harder to test it and make sure that you have the confidence in the product.
Absolutely. Well, hey, man, thank you for spending some time with us.
Thanks for being here. I'm happy to be sharing my ideas here.
Great. Well, hey, great job, and keep on code reviewing, man. Cool.
Thank
you.